Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, hear about progressive activist Aramique Glass-Blake, who is challenging local Democratic Congressman Juan Vargas and taking on the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee over its blackballing of consultants who help challengers in the Democratic primary. The county has taken steps toward creating more parking for hikers heading out to Mount Woodson and Potato Chip Rock off Highway 67, and we'll have details. On Green Scene, hear about volunteer opportunities in state parks for Earth Day and about efforts to restore the San Diego River. On our Arts and Music Spotlight, we'll have news about the newest mural in Ramona. Plus, the County Bar Association will soon be honoring Dana Savra, the judge who ordered the Trump administration to reunite separated immigrant families. Later, we'll have a roundup of the best April Fool's Day spoofs across our region, and trust me, you'll be laughing. Hear about a hit-and-run driver who's pled guilty to injuring an El Cajon boy on a bicycle and then fleeing the scene. On Destination East County, we'll have festivals and events across our region coming up in April, from Earth Day celebrations to the centennial season of classic cruise nights in El Cajon. On the second half of our show, East County Magazine's contributing editor Paul Cruz will be joining me here, and we'll share some behind-the-scenes details of our investigative reporting on two big stories with major developments. First is the resignation of El Cajon Councilman Ben Colasso amid a flurry of ethical and legal challenges. Second, hear how our efforts to get recordings of public meetings held by the Cajon Valley Union School District Board led to a legal challenge filed on our behalf by the watchdog group Calaware, and how our efforts have helped protect your right to know what this public board is doing. So stay tuned for all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Aramique Glass-Blake has announced that she will challenge Congressman Juan Vargas in the Democratic primary next year. A community advocate and restorative justice consultant, she states, "I'm running for Congress because for too long, our community hasn't had a seat at the table and a stake in decisions made about our livelihoods. For too long, equity and justice have taken a back seat to the powerful special interests. I'm running to change that." Blake is a well-known community activist who has put her body on the line. She was arrested twice last year, once after camping out in a tent in front of City Hall for a week to protest the criminalization of homeless people, and after binding herself to a fence outside of the Otay Mesa Detention Center to protest family separations at the border. In East County, she led a protest at Helix High School over a La Mesa police officer's controversial takedown of a handcuffed female student, an incident caught on video that went viral on social media and led to an independent investigation. She also founded the student-led organization Generation Justice to encourage leadership and civic responsibility in our youth. Campaign finance transparency and criminal justice reform are the heart of her platform. Blake takes issue with Vargas over his large campaign donations and contributions from a private prison firm. According to the Center for Responsive Politics website, OpenSecrets.org, Vargas received 77% of his donations during the last election cycle from PACs, 21% from large donors, and less than 1% from small donors. Blake vows not to take any donations from PACs or from Big Pharma or private prison businesses. She makes clear, this campaign is funded by the people and is for the people. Vargas has maintained a solid base of support in his four terms representing the heavily Democratic 51st District in Congress, which includes the southern border area of San Diego, east through Imperial County. He has also amassed a stockpile of political capital and a well-oiled campaign machine after a decades-long career in government, beginning on the San Diego City Council, then the California Assembly and State Senate before winning his seat in Congress. Did the 2018 Democratic primary wins of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York and Ayanna Pressley in Massachusetts, two newcomers who defeated incumbents, set the stage for Aramique Glass-Blake to possibly topple Vargas? not if the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, or DCCC, manages to thwart her. On March 22nd, the DCCC sent out an email to over 100 political firms, warning that it would not hire any private political consultants or vendors who provide services to Democratic primary challengers, and it will also discourage House Democrats from hiring them. The action aims to assure primary wins for incumbent Democrats and focus party resources on defeating Republicans next November. But the policy has drawn sharp protests from Blake and other Democrats challenging incumbents, as well as from political consulting firms. They voiced anger on social media over what they see as a strong arm tactic that amounts to a blacklisting of firms by the DCCC. Blake sent a tweet to the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee Chairwoman Sherry Bustos, stating, "Your job as head of the DCCC is to make our party stronger and keep our majority. How does preventing primaries in deep blue districts make our party stronger or help keep the majority?" So far, the DCCC is holding firm on the new policy. Blake sees this as evidence that it is time for more progressive Democrats to run for office. Her official campaign launch event was held on a Sunday afternoon at Bread and Salt in the Barrio Logan area of San Diego. Over 100 community members were on hand for the festivities, and to show Aramik Glass Blake, or Mika, as her friends call her, support for her run for Congress. Speakers in support of her candidacy included Councilmember Monica Montgomery, former Sheriff Commander Dave Myers, and Mohammed Abdullahi, one of Blake's Generation Justice mentees. As for the DCCC's efforts to squelch primary challengers against incumbent Democrat members of Congress, the tactic could backfire. Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez has weighed in on the DCCC controversy. She is urging people who oppose the DCCC's blackballing of consultants who help progressive primary challengers to donate money directly to the candidates that they back, instead of to the DCCC. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Hikers have been flocking to the Ramona area for years to access the trail to Potato Chip Rock and Mount Woodson. The trail is on land owned by the City of San Diego, but there is no off-road parking, so visitors parking along the shoulders of Highway 67 have long posed problems for motorists in unincorporated San Diego County, walking alongside the roadway and even running across the highway, dodging traffic at 60 miles an hour. Now, county supervisors have taken a step toward building a safe parking area for the thousands of hikers who utilize these popular trails. Supervisors voted to buy 84 acres of land nearby for $1.7 million. Part of the land could be used to build a parking lot, or as a connection to a currently inaccessible 18-acre parcel the city already owns, where a lot might be built. With the board's approval to buy the land, the county staff will begin design work, conduct an environmental analysis, and return to the board in the future with recommendations. County staff is also in conversation with the City of San Diego staff regarding operating the area once improvements are made. In addition to the potential for safer access and parking, the 84-acre property includes moderate to very high-quality environmental habitat, including chaparral, oak woodland, and coastal sage scrub, which could be protected as a county preserve. Reporting for East County Magazine from Ramona, this is John Fistier.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is John Fistier with a Green Scene Report from East County Magazine. On Saturday, April 13th, Californians will come together to make a difference in state parks across California for the State Parks Service's annual Earth Day celebration. You're invited to participate in special volunteer projects focused on climate resiliency, or join in a new family-friendly open house. Locally, Cuyamaca Rancho State Park in East County needs help clearing overgrown trails, painting park structures, and staining picnic tables. Palomar Mountain State Park needs help clearing brush to reduce wildfire risks and to maintain a historic orchard. The nearest open house locally is at a native plant garden in Old Town. Open houses feature music, arts, crafts, and guided park explorations. Volunteers can sign up before April 10th at the California State Parks Foundation website at calparks.org.
The San Diego River is a capricious and temperamental waterway. The first Spanish explorers who worked the land discovered this the hard way. Upon encountering the small stream in 1769 that emptied into what's now known as Mission Bay, they concluded it was nothing more than a tame trickle. A month later, they planted grains along its banks. Then, the year's first rains swelled the river and took out the crops. The next year, they planted farther back, only to experience a drought year that left their fields dry and withered. The city has changed much in the years since then, but the river's fickle ways have remained much the same. For most of the year, the San Diego River winds calmly through Mission Valley, but at the first whiff of a big storm, the river jumps its banks and floods road crossings, Fashion Valley parking lots, and the stadium grounds. Predicting and managing the whims of the San Diego River, and monitoring how its health is affected as it runs through a heavily populated urban corridor, is a job that Natalie Mladenov knows well. The San Diego State University environmental engineer is active in several projects aimed at measuring and restoring the health of the San Diego River. She and her colleagues are learning how restoration can help mitigate the river's sporadic flooding. She believes the river could one day be a point of pride for the entire region. The San Diego River is already an amenity in some places, she says, adding, it would be great to have an even more concentrated effort to make the river and its tributaries an amenity to the whole community. Her team includes engineers, a biologist, and environmental health researcher, all studying the river's ecosystems throughout Mission Valley and in the river's lower tributaries. The university is also hiring several new faculty members with experience in water health and engineering. The projects are funded by the San Diego River Conservancy and the San Diego Regional Water Quality Control Board. All of these projects complement SDSU's plans to develop a 50-acre community river park alongside their university's proposed Mission Valley campus extension. The river park would restore the natural flow of the river near the stadium, helping to prevent flooding while acting as a natural floodplain and sediment filter. One part of the research focuses on removing non-native vegetation along Alvarado Creek, a tributary that runs right by SDSU's campus. Non-native plants like Mexican fan palms, Chinese elms, castor bean, and smilograss grow wild along the banks of the creek, causing blockages and slowing the water's flow. After 2 years of work pulling up these invasive species and helping native vegetation to return, Mladenov says the creek already appears to be in better shape. Last year, we had huge rain events and nothing flooded, she notes. It shows that removal of non-natives can also alleviate water blockages and reduce flooding. Contaminants are also problems for the lower San Diego River, which runs through Mission Valley and out into the Pacific Ocean. The waterway has appeared in the Environmental Protection Agency's listing of impaired waters due to dangerous or unacceptable levels of pollutants or bacteria. Mladenov and colleagues are sampling and analyzing the water from the river and its tributaries. The SDSU team is identifying distributed sources of pollution, such as sewage from leaking pipes oozing into dozens of tributaries along the river across the county. Lawn care products like Miracle-Gro and weed killer can also seep into the watershed after rains, contributing high levels of nitrogen and phosphate that feed algae growth. The river's seasonal cycles can also lead to unhealthy conditions. In the dry season, the river becomes nearly stagnant in places, forming low oxygen pockets in the water that breed anaerobic bacteria. Another source of pollution may come from homeless people who camp alongside the river's banks when rains flush human waste into the river. SDSU's team is working to find solutions to all of these concerns. Along the upper San Diego River, in the mountains of East County, where the river's headwaters are located, SDSU geography professor Trent Biggs and reserve manager Pablo Bryant are working with the San Diego River Park Foundation to establish baseline numbers for what healthy rivers and tributaries should look like. The researchers recently installed a water monitoring station in a small, spring-fed waterhole along Boulder Creek. In the months to come, the station will wirelessly transmit water quality conditions from the relatively pristine tributary. Biggs concludes, "Once we finally have a baseline, we'll be able to better plan strategies for improving the health of these tributaries and the river."
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight.
The Ramona Hart Mural Project now has 19 colorful murals on buildings across Ramona, each honoring the region's heritage. The 19th mural was unveiled on April 6th and depicts Ramona blacksmith Tom Bandy working at his forge. The artist Beata Wozik used a historical photo to paint the mural of Bandy at DiCarlo's restaurant. Lynn Carnival, the manager and co-owner of DiCarlo's restaurant, is the great-grandson of blacksmith Bandy. As with all Ramona mural projects, viewers will be challenged to discover the heart icons hidden in each mural, an exercise much like Where's Waldo? You can get a map to view all of the murals, see photos of them online, or donate to support the Ramona Hart Mural Project at ramonamurals.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
Last year, U.S. Judge Dana Sabra ordered the federal government to reunite immigrant families separated at the border in the wake of the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policies. In May, he will be honored with the Outstanding Jurist Award at the San Diego County Bar Association's annual luncheon. The Lawyers Professional Group presents the honor to an exemplary jurist who provides outstanding community service above and beyond service to the legal profession. Sabra graduated from San Diego State University with a bachelor's degree and obtained his law degree at McGeorge School of Law in 1985. He was appointed to the federal bench by Republican President George W. Bush. His ruling included stinging criticism of the Trump administration's claim that it could not locate many children taken from their parents at the border. Judge Sabra wrote that the government readily keeps track of personal property of detainees in criminal and immigration proceedings, adding, "The unfortunate reality is that under the present system, immigrant children are not accounted for with the same efficiency and accuracy as property." The son of a Japanese mother and a U.S. soldier stationed in Japan during the Korean War, Sabra's middle name is Makoto, which means truth in Japanese. Judge Sabra was previously named San Diego Person of the Year by the San Diego Union Tribune in 2018. The newspaper's editorial board stated, "In a year that featured such attacks on family decency, the law, and truth, it chose Sabra because his honest, thoughtful oversight of a complex case shouldn't be forgotten." Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Jonathan Getz.
Imagine trying to meet the challenges of this rapidly changing world without independent media bringing fresh perspective and uncensored news to the people. This is the context in which we make this plea for help from your community radio station. We served, and now we need you and your support to continue our mission, bringing social justice and independent media to the Southern California airways. San Diego needs KNSJ 89.1 FM. Ironically, KNSJ fell victim to global climate disruption and the worst ice storm in decades, which damaged the antenna and took San Diego's only community radio station off the air. KNSJ 89.1 FM announced that this people-powered radio station will be depending on a people-powered fundraising campaign to raise $4,000 to $8,000 to complete the necessary repairs and technically protect itself against future disruptions. Go to knsj.org and press the donate button now.
On April 1st, pranksters across our region had some fun online, posting April Fool's Day hoax stories that got a lot of attention. The Anza Borrego Desert Foundation posted on Facebook that this season's super blooms also brought super caterpillars, along with a photoshopped image of a foot-long caterpillar measured alongside a ruler. SD Rostra, a libertarian-leaning political discussion forum, hoaxed its readers with an announcement that Special Counsel Robert Mueller's full report had been leaked to the media and could be read online. The link opened to song lyrics by Smash Mouth. La Mesa Village merchants announced the unveiling of a statue to commemorate La Mesa's long-serving former mayor, Art Madrid, in the city's Centennial Park. The post, complete with a fake photo of the statue, claimed fundraising efforts were led by bookstore owner Craig Maxwell, Madrid's longtime nemesis. East County Magazine posted a spoof edition of our own at our online site with several April Fool's Day stories. One reported that after the resignation of El Cajon Councilman Ben Colasio amid ethical and legal controversies, residents have come with vetting criteria for any applicants to fill the seat, including passing a lie detector test. Our April Fool's Day fun also included a county announcement that UCSD researchers have invented artificial sand, eliminating the need for two proposed sand mines that are opposed by many residents of Lakeside and Rancho San Diego. Another report solved Santee's vexing problems of where to put affordable housing, a library, and a homeless shelter. On April 1st, citizens announced a ballot initiative titled Put It All on City Hall that would erect a high-rise on top of the city council chambers to hold low-income housing units, a homeless shelter, and the long-sought library. The initiative would also bring back a popular steakhouse forced to close after losing its lease to a condo developer. An illustration of the gleaming new Santee Council high-rise is topped by the restaurant's signature cow statue. These popular hoaxes and more quickly went viral on social media, drawing smiles across our region. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fisteer.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
Courtney Weber has pled guilty to hitting a 9-year-old bicyclist in El Cajon on October 5th last year, then fleeing the scene in her vehicle. East County Magazine photographer Robert Gare witnessed the accident near West Main and Sunshine. He raced to comfort the young victim, also providing a description of the vehicle to police. According to Gare, the car sped through a red light and never stopped. He ran to comfort the boy, who had been knocked onto the roadway. The child was gasping for breath and bleeding from a head injury. The boy was taken by ambulance to a hospital. Fortunately, he survived the ordeal and is back in school, and credits wearing a helmet with saving his life. Surveillance video showed Weber's blue Honda Fit fleeing the scene. The 25-year-old woman was arrested the next day at her lakeside home, where she was found hiding under a bed, according to Lieutenant Stephen Kirk with the El Cajon Police Department. Lieutenant Kirk thanked members of the community who came forward with tips to help locate Weber, who will be sentenced later this month. Reporting from El Cajon, this is Jonathan Getz.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz.
bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
April brings springtime activities galore to East County. This week's Destination East County includes Julian Gold Rush Days, Meet the Winemaker Weekend, the Catfish Opener at Santee Lakes, a star party at Mission Trails, and a spring extravaganza with egg hunts galore.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including Cajon Classic Cruise celebrating its centennial season, Spring Harp Fest in La Mesa, and a Spring Garden and Butterfly Festival at the Water Conservation Garden.
We'll also have details about Earth Day activities in Jacumba Hot Springs and in La Mesa. Plus, hear about Lakeside's Rodeo and Western Days Parade coming up and a Warbirds Expo at Gillespie Field.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The Julian Gold Rush Days Festival will take place April 6th and 7th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can try your hand at gold panning, tomahawk throwing, candle making, archery, arts and crafts, hay rides, and more at the Julian Farm, or visit the Eagle Peak Mine and Museum to experience the life of a gold miner, including a tour inside the mine. Julian's Doves and Desperados will perform a skit at 2 p.m. in front of the Julian Jail. Of course, you can also try some apple pie, the town's new gold drawing tourists from around the world. For tickets and details, visit juliangoldrushdays.com.
April 6th and 7th is also Meet the Winemakers Weekend in Ramona. Participants can enjoy VIP tours at up to 6 wineries, plus dinner by Something Delicious Catering at Reds, Whites, and Brews, located in the heart of historic downtown Ramona, where you'll mingle with local winemakers. The 2-day event also includes a continental breakfast at Ramona Naturals and snacks by Cheeses from the Cave, plus a souvenir wine glass. For tickets, you can visit RamonaValleyVineyards.com.
The Catfish Opener at Santee Lakes is set for Saturday and Sunday, April 6th and 7th. 2,000 pounds of catfish will be stocked for fishing. Plus, there will be tagged fish that you can redeem for prizes, as well as prizes for the 5 biggest catfish caught. For details, you can visit SanteeLakes.com.
Air Group One, the San Diego wing of the Commemorative Air Force, will host a Warbird Expo and World War II Collectors Swap Meet at Gillespie Field in El Cajon on Saturday, April 13th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tickets for a ride in a real World War II airplane can also be purchased online or at the event. This is the largest fundraiser of the year for Air Group One to help keep these historic World War II aircraft flying and fund youth education programs on careers in aviation. Displays will feature World War II and classic aircraft, vintage and classic cars, and local vendors. The World War II memorabilia swap meet section will have an opportunity to purchase unique artifacts and collectibles, including books, photos, toys, uniforms and insignias, aircraft parts, and more. For additional information, you can visit the Air Group One Commemorative Air Force website at ag1caf.org.
You're invited to a star party at Mission Trails Regional Park on April 13th from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Amateur astronomer George Vargas will bring his telescope to the far end of the Kumeyaay Lake Campground's day-use lot. You'll have opportunities to view galaxies, stars, and constellations. For more information, you can visit mtrp.org.
Santee Lakes is hosting its Spring Eggstravaganza with fun for the whole family on Sunday, April 14th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Children can enjoy continuous egg hunts, pony rides, a petting zoo, carnival rides, crafts, foods, and photos with bunnies. There is a nominal fee for activities and rides. Details are available at SanteeLakes.com.
Celebrating 100 years of cruising, Cajon Classic Cruise opens its centennial season on April 17th. You're invited to view the classic cars along Main Street and Prescott Promenade each Wednesday evening from 5 to 8 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. A full season lineup of activities will be posted soon at downtownelcajon.com.
Harmonicas will be wailing at the 20th Annual Spring Harp Fest in La Mesa's Harry Griffin Park on Saturday, April 20th from 11 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. This festival was founded to promote blues harmonica music, an American art form. Donations at the event are used to fund youth music programs with harmonicas and a summer blues camp. For a full list of performers and details, visit springharpfest.org.
An Earth Day celebration at the Desert View Tower in Jacumba Hot Springs will be held on April 20th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. This festive event will feature live music including blues, classic rock, reggae, and more, as well as Grammy-nominated medicine woman Wind Walker. There will also be wildflower hikes, healthy and vegan foods, native plants, crafts, and farm products for sale, natural beauty and health therapies, and a chance to explore the Inkopa Boulder Park and its unique stone carvings. For more information and tickets, visit the Desert View Tower on Facebook at facebook.com/Desert View Tower. The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College in Rancho San Diego invites you to its annual Spring Garden and Butterfly Festival on April 27th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Visitors can watch butterfly releases and enjoy a butterfly pavilion. There will also be plant sales, tours, crafts, vendors, story time with Miss Metamorphosis, and the Ms. Smarty Plants Pollinator Party. For full details, you can visit springgardenfestival.com.
Yeehaw! The Lakeside Rodeo on April 26th through 28th will showcase cowboy and cowgirl skills in competitions that include bareback riding, team roping, bull riding, barrel racing, saddle bronc riding, steer wrestling, and more. You can find tickets and details at lakesiderodeo.com. Now, the rodeo is all part of Lakeside's Western Days, which also includes the annual Lakeside Western Days Parade on April 27th from 9:30 a.m. to noon through historic downtown Lakeside. This parade features equestrians, floats, bands, clowns, color guards, and drill teams, local dignitaries, and more. You can find details at lakesidechamber.org.
A pedal for the Planet Trail Ride, arts and crafts, vendors, STEM activities, educational materials, a bounce house, and food trucks are all part of La Mesa's Earth Day Festival. Sponsored by the La Mesa Park and Recreation Foundation, La Mesa's Earth Day Festival will be held on Saturday, April 27th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Harry Griffin Park, 9550 Milden Street in La Mesa. The event promises fun for all ages.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Jonathan Getz with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. Today I'm here with East County Magazine's editor, Miriam Raftery, and contributing editor, Paul Cruz. We're going to be talking about two major stories they've been covering, which had some big developments recently, largely a result of their reporting. Great to be here with you.
Thank you.
These are exciting times.
It's just really fun, you know, to be able to go out and actually now just talk about what is happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, we can relax a bit now that some of the pressure of these big stories is off.
The first big story is El Cajon Councilman Ben Colasso's resignation. So, Paul, what reasons did Mr. Colasso give for resigning?
Well, actually, in his resignation letter, Ben Colasso stated, "Although my time on the council has been educational, I felt I was constantly battling my colleagues on agenda items and the general direction that my colleagues wanted for the city." And so he added that the agenda items that he brought forward to the El Cajon City Council did never really had the supporting votes, and that he did not feel that he could be effective. And he also said that he had important family matters which have risen, whereby my future time is very limited. And Colasso's resignation letter also announced a legal settlement in one of the most contentious lawsuits filed against him. But, however, at the same time, you know, his legal woes may not be finished.
Now, Mr. Colasso has had a lot of legal problems. Miriam, tell us about the suit he settled.
Sure. That lawsuit was filed against him by two beauty pageant contestants in a pageant that he ran and a taco shop owner. And they claimed that he and his wife defamed them, that they committed fraud, and that Mr. Colosio engaged in sexual harassment. And this was serious stuff. A judge actually deemed true and admissible that the Colosios took out a whole bunch of fake identifications on Facebook specifically to defame people, that they posted faked nude photos of a pageant queen they had a dispute with, and that Colosio even offered to trade sex for the crown with one of these young women. They also supposedly posted a faked poll ranking the taco shop as the worst Mexican restaurant in El Cajon.
So is the resignation the end of his legal troubles?
Well, no, as Paul noted, it isn't. There is still one suit pending that was filed by attorney Lena Chari, who had previously won a fraud case against Mr. Colosio some years back over a car that went out of control at his car wash and damaged her property, and he made some misrepresentations, according to the court. He was found guilty of that. But she still has a suit against him, claiming that he retaliated against her by posting defamatory information, claiming she failed legal tests, that she was, again, a fake poll, that she was the worst attorney in town, and that she'd had sex in public places. So some pretty outrageous claims still pending against him in that case alone. And there's some more. We'll talk about that a little later.
Now, Miriam and Paul, you've been investigating Colosio for the past 2 years. What were some of your important findings?
Well, we found that he was on probation for workers' compensation fraud. He was running a bogus nonprofit, a Chaldean chamber that operated a beauty pageant. The chamber got its nonprofit status revoked after our reporting revealed that he hadn't gotten a federal tax ID. And then there were the tax ramifications of that for the contributors. Then he was sued by an activist for blocking people on social media, violating First Amendment freedoms. The case was settled, but as a result, several months down the road, he did remove his Facebook and Twitter pages. Then I have been attending his court case with the beauty queens and the taco guy, and as Miriam had mentioned that he had taken out some fake IDs on Facebook to defame people, posted fake nude photos of a pageant queen they had a dispute with. They had also, posted the fake poll.
Now, you two shared an award last year, the Gloria Penner Award from the Society of Professional Journalists, for your entry titled Colosio Threats. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, it started out, when we first entered that, it was about threats he had made against other people, as well as some verbal threats against our media outlet and me personally. He went to great lengths to defame us, slanderous, libelous, you name it. He even threatened legal action, even though our articles were completely truthful, as we pointed out. I told him this would be a slap action were he to file it, which is an action that can be brought involving when a public official tries to intimidate somebody for doing their job, including media doing their job. And he actually lost a slap or an anti-slap motion filed by somebody else against him. So we learned that lesson. He never did sue us, but we really were working under tremendous intimidation. And then after we had entered our entry for that award, he stepped it up. And
That was just about 2 weeks before that we actually received the award from the society.
Right, after we entered.
I was actually threatened by Ben Colosio at the Parkway Plaza Mall in downtown El Cajon. So,
tell us about the threat, exactly what he did, Paul. I know this was absolutely terrifying.
Well, actually, what happened that I was at the Parkway Plaza, and he saw me, and he was there playing with his dog in the parking lot. Then he proceeded.
And this is a dog that he had filmed himself on YouTube,
right,
training to be an attack dog, with the arm padding and the dog biting it.
Yeah, this was a large
biting it.
A large German Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
So Ben came with the dog at me, threatened me, and kept allowing the dog to lurch at me.
Yeah, snarling.
And, and so eventually I literally escaped into my car. And that was, quite frankly, one of the most terrifying things to happen to
yes.
me as a journalist. And, I don't scare a leezy, but scary.
You can't see Paul. He's a big, burly guy. But he called me and his voice was just shaking that night. He was quite shaken up. And he did immediately call the police and
filed an incident report, and it turned out he wasn't the only one. Shortly after that, a process server attempting to file a legal document who came to Colosio's house reported that Mr. Colosio, Councilman Colosio at that time, threatened him with the same attack dog. And then later on, Colosio's political opponent, Councilman Gary Kendrick, and his son each filed police reports alleging that Mr. Colosio stalked them on the campaign trail and harassed them and, you know, and so intimidated them. So in answer to a question you asked, Jonathan, are his legal woes over? No. Not only is the Lena Cherry case still pending, but we understand there is still a district attorney investigation into some of these police reports, so possibly there could be charges for that. And also, there are complaints that have been filed that say he engaged in real estate fraud to hide some assets.
The allegations that he had filed a false mortgage in order to avoid making a big settlement to the lawsuits.
Yeah, a judgment. And by the way, the attorney for the two women and the taco shop guy that sued him say that they are satisfied with the settlement. So sounds like it was favorable from their point of view.
However, it is a confidential settlement, and we really don't know what's inside of that document.
That's true. And in all fairness, we should say that Councilman Colosio has denied the dog attack and these other allegations that four people have made against him in police reports.
So how did citizens react to your reporting?
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
On the 11th of July of last year, I actually appeared before the city council in El Cajon, and I talked in a statement directly about what happened on that night.
Yeah, we felt a need to inform the council that our reporter had been threatened, and we actually spoke privately with the city to make sure that there was security so that our reporters could go to and from council meetings and not be harassed. But not only that, I mean, when we showed up for this, much to our surprise, the room was filled with people calling on Colosio to resign. They had signs they were holding up of, you know, him pictured in orange prison jumpsuits and calling him a sexual predator. And a lot of people got up to the microphone in public testimony and urged him to resign. And now he finally has. Took a few months, but he finally did.
Now, he lost his election, yet was still on council. Explain how that worked.
Ben ran against Gary Kendrick in a new district, and he lost that election last November, 85% to 15%. But through a quirk of redistricting, he still had his seat in an old at-large district seat. And that was a seat that which he would have been termed out of in 2020. He tried to win a district seat. Also, it's kind of interesting that, you know, that Ben has always been kind of a disruptor. And it had been fully expected that he was going to run for mayor. And he had also made, you know, a lot of posts on social media that he was going to be the contender for Bill Wells's seat. But at the last minute, I remember getting the call in the afternoon that Ben had actually filed for the seat being held by Gary Kendrick.
So how will his seat be filled?
Well, that's a good question, Jonathan. The city council actually can choose whether they want to hold a special election or fill it by appointment. Now, in the past, when they've had vacancies, they've always appointed to save money. Traditionally, they have chosen somebody off of the Planning Commission. Of course, the Planning Commission is all people that were appointed by the Republicans on the council, so there's a little controversy over that, but they do have experience and knowledge. Now, as of this taping, they've not yet held the meeting at which they'll be deciding the process, but there's quite a split of opinions.
Can you elaborate?
Sure. Well, as we mentioned, the council is all white, all male, and all Republican now with Colosio's departure. Colosio actually ran as a Democrat, but he later changed to an independent. In fact, he tried to convert to the Federalist Party, which is a very conservative party. And then,
actually, it doesn't even actually exist anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't exist in California, he found out. So he wound up as a decline to state party. This was done, interestingly, when the Democratic Party was having internal talks about yanking his endorsement, not endorsing him for his reelection because of all these controversies. But some say that because he was elected as a Democrat, that in fairness, the replacement should be a Democrat. And there's a lot of people calling for an inclusive candidate, such as a woman or a Latino, an African-American or a Middle Eastern person, because the city of El Cajon, actually, interestingly, is now a majority of minorities, whites are the minority, and a majority Democratic registration.
Do they have to pick someone from a particular seat?
No, actually what can happen here is that they can appoint somebody into his position as a at-large position or from one of the new districts. Now, the controversy might be that appointing from a district could give favoritism to that person running as an incumbent instead of as an open seat, or the appoint at-large and the person is termed out in 2020, so it would be a open election.
Who are some of the likely contenders to fill the seat?
There are different names which are coming up. One is Phil Ortiz. He was just appointed to the El Cajon Planning Commission. He was originally appointed to the board by the Republicans on the city council. Another possibility is Star Bales, a former councilwoman, a Chaldean, and a Republican. Of course, the list of people who have also been outspoken against Colosio is a long one, and so there could be also a possibility of one Nathan Cornett. He was an individual, a citizen, who actually kind of started speaking out against Colosio. And so he's appeared at many council meetings, and he's very outspoken, and he could very well be also on the list.
Well, it could be a very long list. Now, on the progressive or the Democratic side of the aisle, at least two people have announced formally that they are seeking the seat. James Elia, who's the founder of a progressive Democratic club in East County, and he's a former assembly candidate, and he's also an Iraqi Chaldean. The other is Estela de los Rios. She's a fair housing specialist and a Latino rights activist. And interestingly, the two of them are split on whether it should be a special election. Estela thinks it should be, or whether the council should fill it by appointment, which is what Elia says should be done.
If someone is listening and their ears are burning and they want to be considered for an appointment, who should they contact?
The El Cajon City Clerk.
Well, congratulations on all of your hard work and perseverance in doggedly pursuing this story.
Well, thank you. Paul is like a dog with a bone when he goes after, you know, something like this, and it's been really delightful to see the positive response in the community. And so I really want to thank Paul for his hard work, helping me on this story, and just being tireless in his pursuit of truth.
Now, the other story that's been developing, in part based on your coverage, is a positive result for the people's right to access public records in the Cajon Valley Union School District. Paul, tell us what this was all about.
This is actually has been a very interesting story. It's I was actually pursuing one other story, and when I made a public records request, and it was for a recording of a school board meeting where a parent criticized the board for some schools in the Cajon Valley School District failing to meet state standards.
So this started out as a routine story. Paul asked them for the tapes, or the recordings, rather, of two meetings, and one of those requests was made just one day after the meeting. The other was still within the 30-day window. That's the minimum time the state requires school boards to keep their audio recordings. And, of course, many, probably most districts keep them a lot longer, even indefinitely. But the law says that if a records request is made within that 30-day window, they have to fulfill it, even if it takes them a little longer to get around to doing so. And yet, they admitted destroying these recordings of their public meetings that you have a right to know about, listeners.
So what did you do?
Well, we contacted Californians Aware, CalAware for short. Terry Frank is their general counsel, the attorney, and he sent the district a cease and desist order. Now, I also spoke to the board at the next meeting about, you know, how fast and easy and cheap it is to post digital recordings online. We do it all the time with our radio show for almost nothing. And, you know, pointed out this isn't the era of bulky reel-to-reel tapes anymore. But they refused to do that, and they're still refusing to do that part even now.
So how did the board react?
Well, it has been very interesting that this actually has become a great controversy over several meetings with a lot of discussion.
One day after they got the letter from Calaware.
that they actually voted now to keep the recordings for 1 year and provide copies on CD. Now, the vote was 3-2 with two board members, Board President Tamara Otero, who's also Vice President of the California School Boards Association, and Jill Alegria, voting against this even minimal level of transparency and complying with state law, which does require providing copies on request to citizens.
Yeah, and I think we should give a shout out to the ones who voted yes for making these changes, and that was Trustee Jill Bartow, as well as Trustees Jim Miller and Karen Clark Mejia. Now, before, to put this in perspective, the district had said not only did you only have 30 days to hear one of these audios, you had to come in the district office to do so. Of course, they never were available when anybody tried. We tried, another board member, and they weren't available. In theory, if you could actually get in there, you were not allowed to make your own copies. You couldn't bring a tape recorder and make one of your own. They would not even allow you to take notes with a paper and pencil or typing it on your laptop. So this was just...
And even though that they were recording this, they were stating that this was not an official recording and this was only to corroborate the minutes.
And the minutes were missing all kinds of things. It was ridiculous. Like that parent who spent a long time dissing them over the schools, that was reduced to one sentence in a minute. It's very vague.
And what was the board's reaction?
Well, Paul and I have endured all kinds of insults. I mean, it's really unprofessional, and I think they're setting a terrible example for students if they're supposed to be teaching students anti-bullying, and yet, you know, they've engaged some of them in bullying themselves. Jim Miller, who did vote the right way, ultimately, and he's an attorney, but he called our publication yellow journalism at their next meeting, all for simply reporting the truth about what they were doing.
They called us yellow journalists who were, you know, perpetrating fraud.
And putting them in a bad light. Yeah, we had copies of the emails and things. So this was crazy.
So what about those schools failing state standards?
Well, interestingly, and we published the list of them, by the way, I tried to ask Superintendent David Mashiro about this after a board meeting. He was not being responsive to Paul on this, and he refused to be interviewed on this or any other topic, he made clear. But he did say, when pressed, that he believes the state tests are measuring the wrong metrics.
What do the tests measure?
Math and English.
So what did you do to enforce public records rights?
So we initiated Calaware to write the board a letter agreeing to comply with all legal demands, and the board will be voting on the 30th of April.
So anyone who cares about open government and transparency in this district may want to show up on April 30th at the Cajon Valley Union School District.
Definitely.
We've been speaking with Miriam Raftery and Paul Cruz, editor and contributing editor at East County Magazine, on their two successful investigative reports. Miriam and Paul, thanks for sharing your stories.
Well, it's been a delight.
Thank you.
I just want to add that people can go on our site, eastcountymagazine.org, and they can find all of our reporting on the Colosio resignation and the Cajon Valley School Board issues, as well as many others, eastcountymagazine.org.
Yes, and of course, you know, all of this reporting that we do, this investigative reporting, takes money. And is this very necessary for people if they want to maintain our hyper-local news coverage about these very, very important news events, that they do their part to be able for us to continue that work, you know, with a donation.
Yeah, that's greatly appreciated. We reflect the public interest, not special interests, as nonprofit media. And if anyone wants to help that, you can go to eastcountymedia.org or eastcountymagazine.org, either one, and click the donate button to help support independent news in the public interest.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
7 million Californians get medical treatment at community health centers each year. And those centers say that funding issues for this crucial part of the safety net are throwing the system into chaos. Community health centers treat people even if they're uninsured or can't pay in full. But last fall, Congress let their funding run out and took several months to pass a temporary fix. Thousands of healthcare providers gathered recently in Washington, D.C., Capitol Hill, to meet with lawmakers, Public News Service reports. James Luisi, with the National Association of Community Health Centers, wants Congress to approve the Community Health Investment Modernization and Excellence Act, which would approve funding in 5-year blocks for stable funding. Andy Martinez-Patterson is with the California Primary Care Association, a nonprofit that represents community health centers in the state. She says their success must be a priority because they're on the front lines in the fight against poverty, the opioid crisis, and chronic diseases. Across the country, community health centers serve 28 million patients per year, including more than 355,000 veterans and 8 million children, at more than 11,000 clinics. Besides primary care, community health centers also provide dental care and behavioral health services. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Jonathan Getz.
Imagine trying to meet the challenges of this rapidly changing world without independent media bringing fresh perspective and uncensored news to the people. This is the context in which we make this plea for help from your community radio station. We served, and now we need you and your support to continue our mission, bringing social justice and independent media to the Southern California airways. San Diego needs KNSJ 89.1 FM. Ironically, KNSJ fell victim to global climate disruption and the worst ice storm in decades, which damaged the antenna and took San Diego's only community radio station off the air. KNSJ 89.1 FM announced that this people-powered radio station will be depending on a people-powered fundraising campaign to raise $4,000 to $8,000 to complete the necessary repairs and technically protect itself against future disruptions. Go to knsj.org and press the donate button now.
This is Ed Barena with East County Magazine on KNSJ with some grilling safety tips. Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, East County Magazine's in-house fire chief and columnist, says that firefighters respond to many structure and wild land fires that involve barbecues around this time of year. He adds, quote, "We also treat many victims for injuries related to barbecues. Barbecue safety means sending the right smoke signal, and that signal is safety," unquote. While gas grills contribute to a higher number of home fires than their charcoal counterparts, all grills pose a risk for fires and burns. Grills should be placed well away from the home and decks, far from under the eaves or overhanging branches and vegetation. Other grilling safety tips from the National Fire Protection Association are as follows. 1. Propane and charcoal grills should only be used outdoors. 2. Keep children and pets at least 3 feet away from the grilling area. 3. Keep your grill clean by removing grease or fat buildup from the grills and in trays below the grill. 4. Never leave your grill unattended. Always make sure your gas grill lid is open before igniting it. 5. If you smell gas while cooking, immediately get away from the grill and call the fire department. Do not move the grill. If the flame goes out, turn the grill and gas off and wait at least 15 minutes before relighting it. 6. When using a starter fluid, use only charcoal starter fluid. Never add any other flammable liquids to the fire. Keep charcoal fluid out of the reach of children and away from heat sources. When you are finished grilling, let the coals completely cool before disposing of them in a metal container. And finally, use common sense and grill safely.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.